The Ghost of Two Guns, Arizona, Chapter 1, Research Complete. Calvert Shepard was traveling in his pickup truck heading east along I-40 in the high desert area of Arizona. It was late in the afternoon, and he was headed toward home after making a scheduled stop for research for his latest assignment in the west end of the state. Home, in East Tennessee, was still a long way off in terms of days and miles, but it didn't matter to Calvert. His Ford crew cab duly was set up for comfort and convenience during long trips, and carrying camping gear allowed him more freedom of choice for accommodations at the end of each day, especially on trips out into the West. He was not in any hurry to get home on this particular trip. He was on a mission, an opportunity-provided mission. Calvert had traveled this route several times before, but, as luck would have it, never seemed to be in this particular section of Arizona during the evening, as the sun was getting low in the sky. Today, timing was in his favor, so he was going to take advantage of the opportunity and shoot some film. Being an avid photographer, he looked for and noted in his journal places that he thought would provide good photo shoots. While under the pressure of a work assignment, he rarely stopped to take pictures. Since Calvert always carried his camera gear, he took advantage of the time going back home after a special assignment to stop and shoot pictures along whichever return route he chose to travel. Sometimes he would end up at a location he had noted in his journal at the right time of day. Today was one of those days. When Interstate 40 was built through this area of northeastern Arizona, it replaced most of what was Route 66. As Calvert drove along, he was looking for photo ops at exits, where the locals had established tourist traps after the completion of the interstate. He had already stopped at an exit outside of Flagstaff and shot some pictures of two large arrows left standing at an abandoned gift shop and service station. Now he was looking for a place to take advantage of the evening sun. He was close to Winslow when he came upon exit 230. The sign on the interstate leading up to the exit read Two Guns, and he thought, this might be a good place to stop and shoot some sunset pictures. He had noticed this place while driving by on previous trips and knew it had some old stone buildings sitting off in the direction of what looked like a canyon. The old stone buildings would be good foreground for the setting sun. He signaled and made his way up the off-ramp to the driveway that went up to an abandoned service station and some other run-down buildings. A car was pulling out of the service station driveway just as he turned onto the gravel drive at the end of the pavement, and he could see a pickup truck sitting up the hill at an abandoned KOA building. Calvert paused for a moment before continuing onto the gravel drive. He wondered if maybe his idea of stopping here was a good one after all. He noted the position of the sun in the sky and decided to stay. Yes, he thought, I will stay and shoot some pictures since the sun is getting lower in the sky. Besides, he had no idea when he might be back this way again. Calvert drove away from the service station. He headed his truck toward the run-down buildings to the right of the gravel road that went up to the abandoned KOA building. He maneuvered his pickup into an open lot closer to the area where the old stone buildings were located. When he came to a stop, he was in front of a wooden building that was open across the front. He noticed the partial remains of a hitching rail just outside the open structure. Calvert guessed the building was the remains of a tack room. When he looked inside, he could see an old man sitting on a wooden box, partially in the shadows. The old man leaned his head back and looked in Calvert's direction. As Calvert looked closer, he could make out the old man's pale, narrow face and sunken dark eyes peering out from under a black cowboy hat that was rolled up on the sides and bent down in the front. He could also see that the old man was wearing a long black western slicker and scuffed cowboy boots. Calvert could easily tell that the clothes under the unbuttoned slicker were layered, and it gave the added impression that everything he owned in the way of clothes was riding on his thin frame. Calvert got out of his truck and walked around to the rear passenger door and opened it. He got his camera bag out and set it on the ground. He closed the door and reached in the truck bed for his tripod. That's when the old man first spoke. Howdy, son. Looks like you're here to take some pictures. It's a good place. Lots of history, you know. Calvert thought the old man's voice was light and friendly, and as he turned in his direction, he saw him grinning and showing what was left of his yellow teeth. Well, howdy to you, old-timer, Calvert said as he shouldered his tripod. I figured there must be some kind of story with all the old stone buildings around. I thought I would shoot with the sunset behind that one over there, the one on that knoll away from the canyon. Calvert went on trying to make small talk, remembering the car leaving and the truck up at the KOA building. Looks like you have lots of visitors up here. Yeah, it's been like Grand Central Station all day, the old man says with a chuckle. Well, I'll be out of your way as soon as the sun goes down, Calvert said as he gathered up his camera bag and turned toward the path leading to the old stone building. No, you don't have to be in a hurry, the old man said quickly. Most people that stop don't want to talk to an old codger like me. They just ignore me and go on. You're the first one today that has even said hello. If you got a few minutes to visit, I will tell you the history of the area. Calvert did not want to waste time chatting while the sun went down, but he knew he still had a few minutes before the sun was in the right place to cast shadows around the old stone building. Besides, if what the old man said was true, he probably did not get to talk to many people. He thought, what the hell, it might be good to have a story to go with the pictures. Sure, old-timer, what can you tell me about this place? Calvert asked as he stood the tripod up and set the camera bag up on the toolbox behind the cab. He opened the bag, took out a camera, and walked toward where the old man was sitting. By the way, what's your name so I don't have to keep calling you old-timer? Name, you say? What's in a name? The old guy said sarcastically. Never anybody stay here long enough to matter. Well, as long as I am here, I might as well know what to call you, Calvert said, holding back his urge to smile. The old man raised his head, pushed his hat back, and said, You plan on staying a while? Calvert laughed and said, No, just long enough to get some shots of the sunset and the old buildings. Still, I would like to know what to call you. Okay, just call me Gene, but just in case you gotta know, my full given name is Eugene Tipton. Folks have always just called me Gene. What do you go by? Gene shifted his weight on the wooden box and waited for Calvert to answer. Calvert Shepherd. Then he went on to say, Okay, Gene, now that we have the introductions out of the way, you can go ahead and tell me about this place. Then, I will go take some pictures. Chapter 2. The History Lesson. Gene laughed a short, obliging laugh while he reached into the inside pocket of his slicker and pulled out some folded sheets of paper. They were yellowed with age and dog-eared from being handled so much. He unfolded the sheets and handed the top one to Calvert. Calvert took the sheet and looked at it with cautious curiosity. He could see it had a picture of an old western scene from an early settlement. The caption under the photo of three men on horseback in front of a saloon read, Diablo Canyon, Wilder Than Tombstone and Dodge City Combined. Calvert glanced at the sheet and started to read, but realized that Gene was telling him pretty much word for word what was on the page. Gene was telling him how Diablo Canyon started up in 1880 at the end of the railroad line alongside the canyon. The railroad had to wait for a bridge to be built across the canyon. In the meantime, the town attracted gamblers, gunfighters, drifters, and all else that went with folks with money in their pockets. After the bridge was finally completed, the town dried up as people moved on westward. Gene was ready with another tattered sheet and exchanged it for the one Calvert was holding. Calvert took it and glanced at the sketched picture centered on the page. It was showing a group of Indians huddled in the bottom of a canyon at the entrance to a large cave. The group was made up of elderly men and women along with younger women and children. At the rim of the canyon was a group of mounted soldiers with their rifles raised and pointing down toward the group of Indians. He did not attempt to read because, as with the first sheet, Gene was already telling him about the massacre that took place in the early 1800s. Gene went on to explain how the local Indians say the canyon is haunted and no good will ever come of the area. The exchange of tattered sheets and the history lesson continued for a few more minutes and ended with Calvert saying, Gene, you sure are up on your local history, almost like you were here. How long you been here in Two Guns? Gene just chuckled and spoke again as he raised his arm and motioned around, ignoring the question. This place around where you are standing has had four owners since the early 1930s and none of them have been able to make it work. He went on to say, the first three owners all met with a bad end. Bad end, what do you mean by bad end? Asked Calvert. Calvert raised his camera to take Gene's picture. He pushed the shutter button down, but it stopped before completing the cycle. He didn't think it could be the battery. It was not long ago he had replaced it in this particular camera. Even with that thought in mind, Calvert turned to where his camera bag was setting. He would change it anyway, just to be sure. Meanwhile, Gene was going on about how the owner at the time built the stone buildings to look like the original Diablo Canyon town. He did this in the 1930s. Gene went on to say, the one larger building closer to the canyon was built to house mountain lions. The owner somehow managed to get eaten by the mountain lions after they escaped from their cage. When Calvert turned and walked toward his camera bag, Gene called out after him, hey now, Calvert, you not interested in my story anymore?
Yeah, I am for sure. Go on and keep talking. I can hear you.
I started to take your picture, and my camera quit working just as I pressed the shutter button. I think it may be the battery has gone dead. Gene laughed a long, cackling laugh and said, I could have told you. If you try to take my picture, your camera will break. Gonna happen every time. Now you know for sure if you try it again. Calvert answered back, well, maybe you did break my camera, but I will change the battery just to be sure. Are you going to tell me about the other owners? Gene was still seated on the wooden box, but was now taking colored strands of rope from his slicker pocket, unwinding them, and laying them out beside him on the wooden box. He proceeded to wrap different colors of the strands around a small branch bent in the shape of a circle. Calvert concluded from watching that Gene was making a dream catcher. Gene was still talking while working steadily with his hands, and he told Calvert how the second owner moved in, with his wife and their 2-year-old son. The man was originally from Gallup, New Mexico, he said, and his wife was a Spanish woman from the Holbrook area. The wife had heard the stories about the area and was never comfortable living that close to the cave in Diablo Canyon. What happened to the owner? Calvert asked, trying to hurry the story along. After a few years, strange things started to happen around the place, Gene said. The horses would turn up missing from the corral and be found hobbled at the mouth of the cave in the canyon. In the evening after the service station closed, the large water tank up behind the service station would start to drip from a drain valve at the base. The liquid was red and the owner swore it was blood. The next morning after each occurrence, he would start to drain the tank and it would be clear water. He even went so far as to send samples to Flagstaff for analysis, but they always came back okay, and no traces of blood were ever found. Gene continued talking and working on the dream catcher. I believe the thing that finally sent him over the edge was being woken up in the night by the sounds of children laughing and singing. He would get out of bed and look out the window into the moonlight and see Indian children dancing around a small boy in the middle of the corral. He recognized the small boy as his son, and he would go running and screaming out to the corral. His wife would jump out of bed and run to the boy's bedroom. But each night that it occurred, he and his wife would find the boy sleeping peaceably in his bed. I don't know how long this went on, but it was said the owner finally went mad and killed his wife and son with an Indian axe he had found in the cave. This was before shooting himself with a pistol. Calvert found a battery in his camera bag and was working to replace the old one with the new battery. He was now intrigued with the story and asked Gene, what about the third owner? What happened? Well, the third owner bought the place and built the KOA campground up on the hill there, Gene said as he pointed to the abandoned KOA building. He did not have any family living here with him. He only had a brother in Phoenix. They were close, I suspect. It's been told they talked a lot over the phone. He added a gift shop beside the service station and sold Indian relics from the cave, along with the typical tourist souvenirs. He kept the corral up and had horses for the campers to ride on the trail through the canyon and up around the rim of the canyon. Gene put down the partially completed dream catcher but continued on with his story. Things went well for him until one evening late in the fall. He reportedly told his brother over the telephone a story about an old Indian woman, how just as he was closing the service station and gift shop, an old Indian woman approached him and asked to look at the pottery in the gift shop. He turned the old Indian woman away because it was getting dark and he was needed up at the campground. Calvert had stopped working with his camera battery, stood watching Gene go quiet while he fiddled with the dream catcher, and said, so that's it, end of story? No, sorry. The next day, at the same time, the same old Indian woman appeared and asked again to see the pottery. He asked her why she could not be there before he closed the gift shop. He got no answer. He brushed her off again and went up the hill to the campground. According to the brother, this went on for the next 3 days, and each time he sent her away. He was getting really irritated by the fifth day and pushed her away from the door hard enough to make her fall down. Gene, you're telling this story like you were around at the time. Anyway, Gene continued, ignoring the comment by Calvert, that's what his brother said their last conversation was about.
The next morning, they found him tied to the corral fence, bound by his wrist and feet in a spread eagle fashion. His face was distorted and locked in an expression of fear. The authorities were never able to solve the mystery of his death, and nobody was able to verify the presence or existence of the old Indian woman. Calvert said, not knowing for sure what to think, "I guess the present owner is the brother from Phoenix, which would explain why it's been abandoned so long." "I suppose it is true," Jean replied. Somehow Calvert found it hard to believe that Jean did not know who the present owner was. He decided not to press the issue. Jean got up from where he had been sitting on the wooden box and started to walk around the side of the open building. "Where are you going, Jean?" Calvert asked as he finished replacing the battery in his camera. He thought he might get a shot of Jean before he left. Jean stopped and looked in Calvert's direction. When he spoke, Calvert knew by the tone in his voice that the stories were over. "I'm going over to the corral and pick up some more pieces of colored rope. I need more of them to finish making the dream catcher." Jean started to walk away again, but suddenly stopped and turned toward Calvert. When he spoke again, his voice was softer and drawn out, like he was remembering something pleasant from his own past. "You know, an Indian woman showed me how to make dream catchers using the pieces of rope and other items found around this here place. I keep making them. It helps me remember her." Jean turned again and slowly walked around the corner of the building in the direction of the corral. Calvert turned his camera back on as he disappeared from sight. He pointed his camera toward the water tank and pressed the shutter. It clicked with a familiar sound and advanced the film. Calvert could only smile at the thoughts rumbling up in his head. Chapter 3. Picture Time. Calvert did not know for sure what to make of Jean's last statement, but he did know if he did not get his camera gear and make his way to the old stone buildings, the sun would be completely down, and any chance for decent photos would be gone as well. Calvert shouldered his tripod, picked up the camera bag, and headed toward the old stone buildings. As Calvert made his way toward the spot where he wanted to set up his tripod, he noticed a pickup truck was parked along the south rim of the canyon. It must have come in while he was listening to Jean and working on his camera. He continued walking, but now saw that another pickup truck pulling a cargo trailer had made its way up the off-ramp and was pulling through the gate into the lot below where Calvert was walking. The truck made a turn in the lot and stopped along the upper side, headed back toward the gate. Calvert kept walking and nodded to the man as he got out of his truck and stretched. He waved but did not speak as Calvert walked by. Instead, he turned and reached into the bed of the truck and brought out a hose with a fueling nozzle on the end. He could see that the man had stopped here to transfer fuel into the truck's main tank from a fuel tank in the bed. A woman got out from the passenger side and started walking across the lot toward the canyon. She was carrying a camera, so it was clear what she was up to. By now, Calvert had stopped in the path that led to the canyon and stood facing the old stone building. The sun, low in the western sky, was casting shadows across the front of the building. Calvert set up his tripod and attached the camera. He finished the task and started to look through the viewfinder. He pointed the lens in the direction of the old stone building and saw that the woman was moving toward the same building. Calvert focused his camera for the picture, but could only wait for the woman to either disappear behind the building or go on down the hill toward the canyon. The woman was walking unsteadily over the rocky ground, much like a person who was only used to walking on smooth surfaces. Calvert debated whether to take her picture if she ended up sprawled on the rocks, but decided to wait and hope she did not fall before she moved out of his viewfinder. She finally disappeared behind the building, and Calvert took the opportunity to shoot. He got off several frames before the woman emerged again in his viewfinder from behind the other side of the building. He could see that she was now making her way toward the rim of the canyon. However, by this time, the light was fading, so Calvert decided to pack it in. Calvert was gathering his gear, making ready to go back to his own truck when he glanced in the direction where the truck and trailer was parked. He could see Jean standing in front of the truck. It appeared that he was talking to the man, but it also appeared that the man standing up in the truck bed was ignoring him. Jean walked around to the side of the truck bed and pushed his hat back and looked up at the man. The man up in the bed was busy with something, and he never looked in Jean's direction or made any gestures to acknowledge that Jean was there. Calvert thought the whole incident to be very strange. He felt sure if Jean was that close to someone, he no doubt was telling some wild story about this place. Jean reached up and pulled on his black hat, shifting it forward to shield his eyes, then turned and walked slowly back toward the corral. Calvert stood holding his camera gear and watching what transpired up at the truck and trailer. Strange, he thought. Very strange indeed. Chapter 4. Past Encounter. Calvert started again to finish the task of gathering his gear before walking away, but some movement to his right caught his attention from the corner of his eye. When he looked to his right, he could see two men coming up out of the canyon and walking toward him. Calvert picked up the tripod and gathered the legs together. He picked up his camera bag and stepped off the narrow path to wait for the two men to pass. He set his camera bag down beside him and stood holding the tripod. He figured they must be heading toward the first pickup truck that arrived earlier while he was busy working with his camera and listening to Gene. The man in front looked to be in his 40s, the other one much older. As the two men approached closer, Calvert could see similar facial features, so he assumed they were either father and son or brothers. Two men got to where Calvert was standing, and the older one stopped, caught his breath, and spoke to Calvert as if he knew him. Quite a hike up out of there. I didn't remember it being that far. I'm so sorry. Did we get in the way of your picture taking? No problem. I'd already finished shooting. Anyway, I was shooting in the direction of that old stone building over there on the knoll south of the canyon, Calvert said, pointing toward the building, before he asked, did you guys go to the cave? The younger man stopped a few feet beyond Calvert, turned and walked back when the older man spoke. He looked at the older man and spoke with concern in his voice. You okay, Dad? Do you need to rest? We're almost to the truck. I'm okay, son. Just need to catch my breath for a minute. And I was being neighborly. I didn't want to just walk by and not speak, he said, smiling at Calvert. The son was speaking to Calvert, but looking toward his dad. My dad wanted to stop here and look around again. His family stayed up at the campground one summer when he was in his early teens. Yeah, that's right, the dad said, and continued to tell the story. Mom and Dad brought me and my brother up here from Tucson right after the KOA opened. Dad was a teacher and an historian of old wild western towns. He brought us up here to camp for 3 weeks so he could explore the town of Diablo Canyon and the surrounding area. The father paused, then spoke again with a smile. My brother and I loved it because of the horses. We rode every day we were here. They kept them in a corral up there behind the tack room. That's the tack room, what's left of it. The open building up where the black truck is parked, the dad said, pointing in the direction of Calvert's truck. I remember there was an old cowboy that worked here. I believe his name was Gene. He took care of the corral and horses. He had a bedroom in back of the tack room. He always wore a black hat, and whenever he rode the long trails with us, he wore a long black slicker. The son started to protest, but the father raised his hand with a forefinger pointing and continued his story. Dad used to sit and talk with the old guy out front of the tack room by a fire, oftentimes and way up into the night. My brother and I would come down sometimes, but I don't remember what they talked about, knowing Dad. It had to do with the history of wild western towns. One thing I do remember, the old cowboy would make dream catchers while he sat and talked to Dad. Calvert was having another strange indeed moment after listening to the old man talk about his childhood camping trip here at Two Guns. He could not resist asking, did your father not talk about his findings here at Diablo Canyon? He must have gathered a lot of interesting history in 3 weeks. The son waved at his dad and said, come on, Dad, we need to get back on the road to gallop. You've shared enough with this stranger. No, son, the dad replied. I came here to remember the good times with my mom and dad before they were killed. This stranger, as you call him, is interested in what I have to say. Let me answer his question. The old man turned to Calvert and spoke in a more somber tone. Mom and Dad died 2 weeks after we got back to Tucson. They were on their way to Phoenix to donate some Indian relics and other Western stuff to a museum. A tanker truck lost control and hit their car. They both died instantly. They told us the driver claimed to have seen some Indian children running across the road. He swerved to miss them and hit the car. I'm sorry to hear that, Calvert said. My brother and I talked over the years about driving back up here to see what had become of this place. He died last year, and I decided to make the trip this year. This is the same time of year we camped back during that summer. Calvert said, again, I am sorry to hear that about your parents. It had to be rough on you and your brother. If you don't mind my asking, did your mom or dad buy any relics from the gift shop here? The old man looked at Calvert with a puzzled look on his face and said, yes, my mom bought a piece of pottery. The gift shop attendant told her it was from the cave in the canyon. Mom was so proud of it, she said she would donate it to the museum when they got back home.
Why do you ask?
Calvert did not want to start down any mystic theory road, and he sure did not want to cause the old man any pain, so he just said, "No special reason. I was just remembering a story told to me by the old cowboy that hangs around here and makes dream catchers to sell. I was talking to him up at the tack room when I first got here. You guys did not see him sitting in the tack room or walking to the corral when you drove up?"
"No," the old man said. "We saw the black truck, and I guess it was you up at the tack room, but nobody else. Isn't that right, son?"
The son had a puzzled look on his face from when Calvert mentioned the old cowboy and dream catchers. By now, the son was pacing back and forth in the narrow path. He stopped next to his dad, nodded a yes, and then said, "Dad, come on, we got to go now. We will be late getting to Gallup. I'm sure this man wants to get out of here as well, before it gets completely dark."
Calvert picked up his camera gear and shouldered his tripod. He fell in behind the two men and walked along the path toward the lot where their truck was parked. When they reached the lot, Calvert stepped up beside the older man and asked, "Did you guys go into the cave?"
"No," the old man said. "We just walked part of the trail where my brother and I rode that summer. The trail goes down into the canyon and passes by the cave. We went up to the cave but did not go in. Strange, though, there were lots of barefoot tracks leading in and out of the cave, looked like children's footprints. I picked up this piece of pottery that was partly buried in the sand, and this fossil." He held out his hand to show Calvert the two pieces. Calvert did not want to go into any more detail. He extended his hand, shook hands with the older man, and said to him,
"Well, you guys have a safe trip to Gallup. It was nice talking to you, sir. I hope the memories help make the trip worthwhile."
Chapter 5. Close Encounter. Calvert walked away as they got into their truck to leave. He was headed to his truck, but had to pass where the truck and trailer was parked. The man had finished doing whatever it was and was now leaning against the side of the truck with his arms folded. He was looking in the direction the woman had ventured when they first parked. Calvert remembered Jean's encounter earlier and stopped to see if the man would ignore him as well.
"You get good fuel mileage pulling that trailer?" Calvert asked, knowing what to expect the answer to be, since the truck was the same make and model as his truck.
The man answered, "Yeah, about 10 to 12 miles per gallon, loaded. I stopped here thinking this was a fuel station, but I see it is abandoned. I needed to pump some fuel from the tank in the back. I did not want to take a chance and be on the side of the interstate pumping fuel. Do you know how far it is until the next place to buy diesel fuel?"
Calvert replied, "Yes, the next town is Winslow. There is a truck stop there. After that is Holbrook."
"Where are you folks from?"
"We're from Michigan. My wife and I came down to pick up some product in Phoenix. We are on the way back now."
Calvert could not resist. He had to ask the guy about Jean. He thought now was as good as any to raise the question.
"Did you see that old cowboy with the black hat and slicker walking around here? He seems to be homesteading this place and providing history lessons to anyone willing to listen."
The man looked at Calvert and said, "I didn't see anyone except you three guys down there close to the canyon. Someone dressed like that, I'm sure I would have noticed him. I was pretty much occupied until just a few minutes ago. He could have walked by without me noticing."
Calvert was tempted to relate what he saw earlier, but decided instead to wrap up this conversation and get to his truck. He said to the man before turning away,
"Your wife is down by the canyon rim. You might want to caution her about rattlesnakes. The heat of the day warms the rocks, and they tend to come out and lay on them when the sun goes down. They enjoy the warmth. The way she was stumbling around earlier, she might just excite one the wrong way."
The man, upon hearing that, did not question Calvert about his opinion of her walking skills. He rushed off to find his wife.
Calvert walked to his truck and loaded his camera gear.
Chapter 6. Hot Meal. Calvert got into his truck to leave. By now it was getting dusky dark. He looked up the hill toward the KOA building and thought he could make out Jean's image against the fading glow of the sunset. He remembered he had some food in the lunchbox oven, left over from his earlier meal, and thought about offering it to Jean. He drove his truck up the hill to the KOA building to see if he could find him. As he turned into the drive facing the building, he saw Jean coming around the corner. Calvert got out, walked around, and opened the passenger door. He looked in Jean's direction and said loud enough for him to hear, "Hey, Jean, when's the last time you had a hot meal?"
Jean came over to the truck. Calvert was getting the lunchbox oven out and setting it up on the toolbox lid. Calvert reached in behind the seat and brought out a paper plate and plastic utensils. He served the hot food onto the plate and turned to hand it to Jean. Here you go. I hope you enjoy it. I cooked this and enjoyed some myself earlier today. Sure am glad to get to share it with you. Jean reached out and said, "That is not a glass plate, is it? It sure looks like one. Wouldn't want you to leave a good plate. The food looks good. I was just getting ready to go up and have a bologna sandwich before turning in for the night. This is a real treat. Thanks a lot, Calvert. I will take this up to the loft, eat it, and then go to bed." Calvert asked, "Is that your truck parked over there by the trees? Where do you sleep, Jean? By the way, you never did tell me how long you've been here." Jean just laughed and said, "No, it belongs to some hunters that came in early this morning. As for sleeping, I have a place fixed up in the loft of the KOA building. I got cushions for a bed and plenty of blankets. I've been here a while. I do just fine. Thanks again, Calvert." Jean turned and walked around the corner of the building and disappeared into the dark. Calvert finished putting his stuff away, got in his truck, and drove down the hill to the on-ramp onto I-40. He got on the interstate and drove the 22 miles to Winslow, thinking about what had transpired during the afternoon and evening. The conversation with Jean was by far the focal point. Everything and everyone else that he saw and heard left him wondering about what really went on at Two Guns. It for sure had been a different day from other stops he had made in other parts of the country. Calvert knew it would be too late to set up camp at Winslow, so he decided to park at the truck stop and sleep in his truck. He had a pretty comfortable bed in the back where the seat used to be, and his thermal sleeping bag would be enough to keep him warm for the night. Besides, he had better sleeping accommodations than Jean when he thought about him sleeping in the loft of the abandoned KOA building. Calvert found a spot out of the way of trucks and set about getting his bed ready for the night. He crawled into the sleeping bag and snuggled down, waiting for his body warmth to heat the inside of the sleeping bag enough for the chill to go away. He thought about Jean back at Two Guns and wondered if he was really doing as well as he said. Calvert decided that tomorrow morning he would go back to exit 230 and see for himself just how Jean was surviving the cold nights. He slipped into a deep slumber as he felt the warmth of the sleeping bag. The day was done. Chapter 7. The Dream Catcher. Calvert woke up as daylight was breaking and looked out the window to see the sun starting its ascent in the sky. He got up, stepped outside, and felt the cold morning air on his face and hands. He rolled up his sleeping bag, stowed it away, and finished getting his truck ready for the day's journey. He started the truck to let it warm up, stepped out, closed and locked the door after making sure he had his spare key. Calvert walked to the truck stop restaurant to get himself a coffee. He walked back outside, felt the cold air again, and decided to go back inside and get another cup to take to Jean. Calvert arrived back at exit 230 and made his way up the off-ramp and onto the road leading up to the KOA building. There were no other vehicles to be seen. In his mind, this was a good thing. His first thought was to go directly to the KOA building, but then he stopped, backed up, and turned into the lot in front of the tack room. He parked in the same location as yesterday. This time of day, the morning sun lit up the inside of the open tack room. There was no sign of Jean, only a few strands of colored rope scattered on the ground around a wooden box. Calvert thought it might be too early for him to be out and about, so he made a circle in the lot and drove up to the KOA building. He parked his truck but left the engine running, thinking Jean would hear it and show himself. Calvert sat in his truck for a couple more minutes and still saw no sign of Jean stirring in or around the building. He got out and walked toward the corner of the building where he last saw Jean the evening before. As he rounded the corner, what he saw made him stop dead in his tracks. There on a wooden box outside the door was the plate of food he had given Jean to eat. It had not been touched at all. The spoon and fork was still in the same position he stuck them as he handed the plate to Jean. Calvert was starting to think the worst had happened to Jean before he got a chance to go up in the loft. He could not imagine Jean not eating a hot meal, considering how grateful he sounded when he offered him the plate of food. Calvert walked around the building looking for any signs of Jean, but did not find anything showing that he was there. He made his way into the building to look around and was really starting to think that maybe yesterday was only a dream. The floor was long gone, probably removed some time in the past by hunters looking for dry wood to burn. The dirt showed no footprints, except for animals. His last place to look was up in the loft. There was a stairway next to the door. It was possible, he reasoned, to step from the door sill onto the stairway without stepping in the dirt. It did not make sense as to why Jean would do it that way. but it was possible. Calvert climbed the stairway up to the loft and looked inside. The morning sun provided enough light to see the entire loft. Calvert did not see anything but an open area from one end to the other. There were no boot tracks in the dust on the floor, no bedding, no cushions, nothing but open space. Calvert took one last look around, and that's when he noticed it hanging on a nail next to the top of the stairway. There, moving gently with the morning breeze, was a dream catcher, the same dream catcher Jean had been working on yesterday while sitting in the tack room. It was complete now with the same colored strands he saw on the floor of the tack room earlier today. Calvert reached up and took the dream catcher from the nail. He turned and walked back down the stairway and out the door to his truck. He thought as he stood beside his truck looking around one last time, part of the answer as to why is clearer now. Calvert Shepard got into his truck and drove east away from exit 230 and Two Guns. He looked at the dream catcher hanging on the rearview mirror and smiled. He was not sure why Jean chose him. He would try to sort it out the same way he did other things. While he drove, one thing was for sure, he had an interesting story to go with his pictures. One other thing was definite. He would not be telling this story or writing this story in any other way but as fiction.